Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Ruminations of Red Room, the horror podcast of the Ruminations Radio Network. I'm your host, Kyle. Sorry, I'm your host, Kevin. Keith? Which one are we doing? I kind of look like a Keith, right?
Like Keith David.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Keith Urban. Oh, wait, that's Carl Urban. I'm thinking Carl Urban.
Herbie Hancock. Kyle with a K. Today we have a very special episode. It's our Discord community pick episode. If you join our Discord via the Twitter link in our bio, our Twitter bio, you could hang out with us, talk horror movies, but you also get chances like this to recommend us films to watch and talk about. And this is one set episode. So congratulations to AC Royals for winning this month's episode rec. He gets a point in the quarterly contest, and we get to talk about this 2005
AC
zombie
Royals.
Film. Ian, already with a question. Ian.
No, I just want to say everyone got a chance last quarter. I think there were no duplicate picks for the Rex, so that worked out perfect. I think we had one from Dylan, Reeps, and then AC.
Oh, interesting. We should do a episode where we rank and rate like everybody's Rex, and then like we can crown the person with the best taste in film.
Definitely.
Well, we know
Dylan's not gonna win it. So
I was gonna say, since AC pitched both The Exorcist 3 and this movie, I don't think he's gonna be on top.
He's off to an interesting start.
Exorcist 3. Interesting start. Banger. Fabio, come on.
Well, yeah, wait a minute. Didn't you like Exorcist 3, Brennan?
No.
Or were you... Oh, you were the one that didn't like it. Okay, yeah. I thought that was Ian. Interesting. Joining me today, I have what we can now establish as the ghost of Mars, the ghost of Tsushima, the paranormal one haunting your living space. He's Ian with two E's. Ian, how you doing?
This is cool because I love these nicknames, because I'm a big fan of ghosts. Always have been. Always will be. Got a lot of ghost stories. Good shit. So I'm very happy with this nickname.
You have one quick ghost story that you could tell us?
No. I think it's got to be like an episode.
Joining us, we have... I'm just kidding. I have a ghost story, but yeah, it is kind of a lengthy one, so I'm not going to get into it. Because I got to set it up,
yeah,
you know, and you got to get the vibe going before you just jump straight into the spook.
Yeah.
So, okay. Have you been indulging in anything lately?
Oh, I went indoor rock climbing again yesterday. It's been a while. And I got home. It was a great workout. Got home, went to bed, super cozy. Mm. Sat up this morning, literally every muscle pain, just pain. But that goes to show like how much a workout rock climbing is. I feel it everywhere. I have biceps, triceps, pecs, back, everything.
Do you feel it in your taint?
Feel it in my taint muscle.
is it one of those things where like a post rock climbing shower just hits completely different?
Definitely. And yeah. I the testosterone that's just running through your veins.
You feel like a man.
Yes.
Like,
yep.
Interesting. I may have to try this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very intrigued. Also joining me, we have the hero of the San Francisco Bay. We have the stretchy boy, Brendan Jesus Ortega Madison. How you doing?
I was just thinking, I haven't had a reach lately. So here, I got a reach for you.
I've been missing your reaches, honestly.
I just feel like I haven't had any good ones or any.
Now that we're on the topic, do you feel like you're not living up to the name anymore?
Yeah.
Interesting.
I'm just gonna go back to the new blood.
Oh. No, you're
past, that. Yeah,
you're you past can't that. Go back.
You're but not new.
What about Brendan Takes Manhattan?
Look, you're always going to be the stretchy boy to us, and there's always time. You just haven't gotten to your redemption arc yet.
I got to reach for you. This movie is good. Psych. This movie fucking sucks. I'm kidding.
I don't know if that's a reach. But
hitting us with a super hot fire reference.
Brennan, have you been indulging in anything lately other than the film festival?
Yes. Now that it's over,
I want to know some leisure Brennan stuff right now.
Yeah. I bought a bunch. I had a gift card for Target, so there was this 2-for-1 deal going on, and I bought six discs. I bought six physical things. One of them was the Insidious 5 movie collection. Yeah.
I say when we have something to show off, you know, physical to show off, I say we just have it on hand, whip them out as we're doing it, right? I just think it's
I like whipping it out, but also yeah. I think it would be great. No, this is future episode talk. I think it'd be great to do that for our video cast.
I'll just do a quick rundown of
I just had an idea but I'll save it
okay of the movies I watched. The first was called Daddy's Girl, starring Costas Mandalore. Terrible movie. He's fun in it, whatever. I watched Cocaine Bear. Very unfortunate that was Ray Liotta's last movie. That movie fucking sucked.
Ian likes it a lot.
It doesn't suck.
Well,
What did I do?
No, I'm kidding.
Ian, rebuttal, please.
I think you gave it a 3.5.
3.5 with a heart, and you were like,
"That's
surprisingly,
fair.
Surprisingly, one of the bangers of the year, or something." Some stupid comment. I'm kidding. Not stupid.
I went into that movie knowing nothing about it. I didn't even want to go, but I went with a group of friends in the theater, Elcon, actually. So it was like a kind of a shittier theater, you know.
Watch your mouth about Elcon.
It was a less updated theater, and it surprised me. It was fun. I had fun. So I can see watching it alone how it'd be an absolute shitter, but I liked it.
No, I watch most things alone, and I like most things.
preach, brother.
Ian, a movie I know we can agree on is I watched Talk to Me, and that was, that was just a damn fine movie.
Reeps watched it too. He loved it.
Yes, he watched it because if you guys join the Discord, just threw a random digital code in there the other day. I have three more on the docket, so you could win some digital movies too.
Yeah.
And the last one I watched is something that I'm not remembering, and I could go to my Letterboxd to do that. Dead Air. This is fun. Oh, Men. I watched Men.
Men.
I gave it a heart just kind of because I felt like the last 20 minutes. Kyle, did you see my Letterboxd review for it?
Yes, and I agree.
I think that's a pretty fun.
Yeah,
fun.
No, I like thing. I think I actually did like it. But
the final 20 minutes of that made everything so worth it. Ian, have you seen it?
Yeah, me and Kyle watched it together. We sat next to this lady who was just...
Was that the one where I couldn't contain my laughter?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. That was one of the best moments of my life.
She thought this was the most insane film she's ever seen in her life, and she made it known
verbal about it, and the wild shit she was saying had me like... it was one of those theaters too where like the acoustics were in such a way where like you can like blink and like people could hear your blink. So like any kind of squeak I would have made from laughing would have been amplified to the 10th degree. So I was trying not to laugh because it would be well known to everybody in the room. And it was one of those things where the more like when you're sitting in school, when you and your friend are trying make each other laugh. It was that situation. And
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was insane. But sorry, I digress.
Well, since the three of us have seen it, I'm comfortable dropping a little spoiler, I guess. Yeah. The birth scene. It looked
cool.
It looked a little too rubbery at some points. But just like the visuals of that was so unbelievable.
I agree with you. That's also the first time I've ever heard too rubbery as a criticism for a movie.
No, when I say too rubbery, I mean it looks too digitally manipulated.
Skin that the human comes out of for the birthing process.
That easily could have been a practical effect. And I'm sure to an extent, a good portion of it was practical.
They should have just done it practically.
They should have gotten Rory Kinnear real birth. Fucking pregnant. They should have
gave real birth to himself.
Yep.
That would have been hard.
So the one thing I will say, everyone's like, oh, Rory Kinnear plays every guy character. There's one guy he doesn't play, and I think it would have been ballsy if he did try to play it.
Which guy?
Her husband.
Oh.
The black guy.
Yeah. Yeah, we're not going to get into that. He's just in full blackface. That would be insane. So,
but what about you?
Ian,
besides your treacherous morning. Oh,
what about Ian first? Hold on, Ian. What have you been up to? What have you been watching? Aside from the one that we were supposed to watch all together at the same time and covered on an episode.
Oh, that one.
Yeah. Aside from that one,
Suicide Club. I watched a stop motion film from the early 2000s last night, and it was absolutely amazing. It had It was kind of like, I don't know, it's hard to compare it to someone or something, but the soundtrack was hidden. It reminded me of Lord of the Rings, but like done with the anime Beastars in mind. It was very strange and cool. And like, it had kind of James and the Giant Peach vibes, but it was awesome. I liked it. Very much enjoyed it.
What's the name of the film?
It was called Blood Tea and Red String. And that one was great. Also watch Nosferatu for the movie of the week this week in the Discord. And very creepy. Very creepy, gotta say.
Cool. Brennan, question before we begin proper. How is your feelings towards finishing Heavy Rain? Has it changed at all?
I still find the controls and the weight of everything to be incredibly annoying. I hate the controls. I hate everything about the game mechanics. The story, I'm loving. Yeah.
Ian, question.
How far are you in terms of hours?
I got to the part where I think it's after the private eye beats up, after the private detective beats up Tony in the sex worker's room.
So pretty early on, yeah.
And so I'm right at the scene where you're the third character who arrives at the crime scene.
Norma Jaden.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, you're a little farther along. I was going to say, I think like 2.5 hours in, I got used to the controls, and that's when I like.
No, I've gotten used to it. It's not that. It's just I fucking despise it. It is stupid. It is awful.
A lot of quick time. It's only quick time events.
No, I don't care about the quick time events. I care about, so you have to hold R2 to walk, and then you want to open this door. You better flick the stick in a Pac-Man motion. Oh, you missed it? Let's try it again. Oh, you missed it? Let's try it again. Oh, because your controller has stick drift. If you walk past something, it automatically tries to fucking do it. It's so fucking stupid, and I hate it. And you guys are lucky I like the story so much. I was hoping I could save all this for Tuesday, but
we'll have plenty more to talk about. That's just, guys, that's just a little tease in what's to come for the Heavy Rain episode. I will say, though, the Steam PC version doesn't have the hold R2 to walk thing. You just move the stick and he walks. So that's way better. Yeah.
Oh, so. You want to know what your character objective is? Let's hold L2, and I hope that you can, that your stupid little fucking ADHD mind can keep track of everything spinning around your character's head. Oh, you want to interrogate? You think that's X? It's actually circle, but you can't tell because it's hiding behind the character's head.
Got good points. And he flipped out the camera. All right.
Well, with that being said, guys, it's time to get into the film proper. Look, very much looking forward to that Heavy Rain episode, guys. I hope you all are too. We're covering the 2005 zombie film Severed. But before we get into it, we're going to go with Brendan for some...
When I tell you there's no information on a movie, sometimes I'm being hyperbolic. There is no information for this movie. So I'm working with what I can here. Okay. Severed, aka Severed, Forest of the Dead, is a 2005 Canadian zombie horror film from co-writer and director Carl Bisai. Bisai was never really able to break into mainstream filmmaking. In fact, his casts have gotten less and less impressive as his career went on. From directing the likes of Carrie Ann Moss, J.R. Bourne, Deborah Kara Unger, and, surprisingly, Sir Ian McKellen, to directing Hallmark-style Christmas crappers, it's clear Bisai could not find a niche to sink his teeth into. Interestingly enough, Severed story writer Julian Clark would have an illustrious career as an editor for films and shows like Love, Death, and Robots, Terminator Dark Fate, Deadpool, and 2011's The Thing. Special effects makeup artist Harlow McFarlane would also go on to have a very prominent special effects career with films and shows like The Last of Us, Midnight Mass, Deadpool 2, and Cabin in the Woods. Severed received fairly negative reviews, with one overarching positive note: the cast. So without further ado, let's sever ourselves from ever having to talk about this movie again, and let's discuss.
I love how Brennan stays completely unbiased in his fear facts. I love it. I love it. Well, that being said, let's go ahead and throw it over to Brennan first, since we kind of got a picture painted a little bit on what he thinks of the film. Brennan, where'd you watch it? Would you add it to your collection? And what did you think of the 2005 film Severed? Please get into as much as as little as you'd like. AC Royals, hopefully you enjoy.
What is cinema?
What is trash?
I watched this on Tubi. I would not add it to my collection. And I'm really invested in the idea of tree spiking now. If there's one thing this movie did, it got me very interested in eco-terrorism.
Can you explain what tree spiking is?
Yeah, for all the audience members that doesn't know what tree spiking is. Because I know what it is, but I'm saying for all the audience members.
Yeah, we all know.
Eden and I know what it is, but for everybody else that doesn't know, can you educate them?
Okay, so basically, in the 1980s, there was an environmentalist advocate. His name was David Foreman, and he had a few organizations, but one of them was called Earth First, and they had a magazine. And David Foreman is actually a really interesting character because he was able to take this eco-terrorism that he was committing and turn it into something positive, where after his tree spiking that was inspired by his words, he turned his life around after someone got severely injured, and he started to collaborate with conservation biologists. So he turned this eco-terrorism, which had good intentions but got people hurt, and he turned that into a positive thing. And I think that's very interesting. But so basically, in his magazine, Earth First, he talked about this idea of basically to end deforestation, you can end the people that are doing it. So they would take these metal spikes and they would dig them in, or they would pound them into a tree. Sometimes it would be trees that were standing. Because if you're coming at a tree from an angle with a chainsaw, you're going to be a little bit more off balance. So if you hit a metal spike,
it's going to kick it back up. Exactly,
yeah. But then once...
Pretty much like launching a saw blade into your face.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
And so basically once these lumber people started to realize that, they were checking the trees for the spikes. And they would find ways to remove the spikes. Yeah.
Is in the beginning, when that dude's chainsaw goes into his arm, did he hit a tree spike?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's what got me interested in it. I think I spent like 20 minutes of this movie researching tree spiking. But so basically what happened was once the lumber people were getting wise on this, they were able to sometimes remove the tree spikes. And what they didn't know is after the trees were lying on the ground, these teams of eco-terrorists, the government's words, not mine, these teams of eco-terrorists would go to trees that were already lying on the ground and spike them because they were not expected to be spiked. So people just weren't thinking about it. And so someone in 1989 got severely injured from one of these tree spikes. And one of the people that was involved with this tree spiking would go on to testify against her co-conspirators for immunity. And the funny thing is, in 2021, her name was Tracy Stone Manning. Joe Biden nominated her to be the lead of the Bureau of Land Management.
Interesting.
And that's tree spiking in a nutshell.
Interesting.
So what'd you think of the movie?
Tree spiking is really cool. I don't know. This movie just feels like it's a bunch of ideas thrown at a wall with no connection between them whatsoever. The only connection is one of the guys involved is the son of the millionaire that's doing this. In the bunk fuck scene, like, what?
Was it hot to you or what?
In front of everyone.
You weren't hot. You weren't getting heated at all from it or what?
There
was no heatness?
No, it just felt really awkward. Because, like, they kiss and then he's like, oh, sorry. And she's like, it's okay.
There's just a long like, pause and he like goes back in.
If I went to kiss someone and, like, I couldn't feel the vibe and I was like, I'm sorry, and they just said, it's okay, I wouldn't be going back in for a second one.
I can see that. It was also in front of, like, the entire convoy.
And then in the morning, Andy is like, what's up, lovebirds? So it's very clear. It's very clear that everyone heard them.
Yeah, people were awake, for sure.
Oh, my God.
And then Attola Hun, he came in and he was like, oh, trying to hide this piece of ass.
Oh, that's the guy you're talking about. Yeah. I recognized him from somewhere and I was trying to piece together, but that makes sense.
This zombie apocalypse has been going on for like 4 or 5 days at the most at this point. Yeah. And this guy's already like, well, I guess we're going to have to breed to reform the world. Like... I'm done.
And you said you wouldn't add it to your collection. Right? No, I think you make a lot of very good points, some of which I mirror. So I'll be talking about them too. Ian, where did you watch the film? Would you add it to your collection? And give me your full thoughts, your full beautiful girthy thoughts on Severed 2005.
So I watched this on Tubi. I like that they have like this this animated thing now. It's when you open the app, it only happens on my small TV, but they do the Tubi.
I like that.
It's nice. It's a nice little thing. I'm liking the rebrand. I'm liking the rebrand. I don't like the colors.
I don't like the colors. If I'm being honest, I don't like the colors.
Purple,
it looks too
and yellow
and the font. It looks too bubbly. It looks too like it's not edgy enough.
Do you think it's because they were starting to get like known as the horror streaming service and like the black background with like the blood red Tubi behind it kind of made it feel synonymous with horror. And they kind of wanted to be like, we have other things too.
Maybe. I think with the rebrand, it makes it look more family friendly.
Yes,
for sure. The rounded ball, you know,
when pretty much everything on their site is not rated.
Yeah. A lot of like, pinky films and Japanese schmuck and like just some random stuff like this.
No parental controls either, from what I...
There is now.
Is there now?
Because
I know there didn't used to be. So.
Really? Because when I went to play Severed, it said there is mature... I'm paraphrasing, but it said there's mature stuff in this movie. Please sign in to watch.
Hmm.
Interesting.
I mean, but what kid doesn't know how to create an email?
That's true.
A password, right?
I mean, that's true.
I had a Facebook when I was like 11.
Yeah.
Love Tubi. It's probably my favorite free streaming site. I tried.
Are we just trying not to talk about this movie?
Dude, honestly though, for real, Tubi is one of those things where I can't stop talking shit on it. But then when I use it, I'm like, man, I'm glad this exists. This is so cool. Tubi, good on you.
It gives you a little timer for when the ad's going to come up and then when the ad's going to leave.
I like the user interface of Tubi. Let's just keep talking about Tubi.
Yes. Whole episode on Tubi.
Tubi. We should have an episode completely on streaming services, though, and ranking them, maybe.
Definitely.
That could be
definitely cool. Because I've tried a lot of them. Like, yeah. Yeah. I'm branching out to, like, movies that aren't on any streaming service. Like, She's All That. Or not She's All That. She's the Man. It was only on, like, Peacock.
She's the Man, by the way. Classic movie.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, classic movie. And I think that maybe before you get into your thoughts about the film, I think that maybe we should give Screambox a chance. Just hear me out.
Screambox is good.
I think that we should put it in the running if we're going to do the episode where we rank them. I feel like Screambox has to be included in the talks.
Yeah. I don't know why
they literally
wouldn't.
Like $30 a year. Or it's like fucking $3 a month or some shit. So it's like super cheap.
Yeah. I know one of your gripes was they didn't have an app on your TV, but I think they do now.
They've changed it. Yeah. 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 There's an app on Apple TV and all that shit. So, like, I'm about to get fully invested. In fact, after this episode's over, I might even just subscribe and just check it out. What, you know?
There's this movie on there called Terrifier 2.
I had that on 4K.
No.
It's not okay.
No big deal. But, you know,
they were selling that for like literally 2 cents at Best Buy.
They weren't, but
they're like, please take this.
Ian, talk to me about
get rid of our inventory.
What a great time 2005 was, and just talk to me about Severed, and talk to me about these 2000 costumes and these 2000s haircuts, and just talk to me about the film
and how everyone was wearing a flannel.
Yeah, I mean,
but
they're
Canada.
They're lumberjacks.
They're lumberjacks.
Jacks and Jills.
Yeah.
You know, so
2005, 6 year old Ian, probably in what, second grade, second grade.
I mean, there is a definitive answer. So.
well, I didn't get held back or held forward, so I was in the right age for the grade. This movie, where to begin? You know,
where to begin?
Would I add it to my collection? Let's give the review first. It has that super British cinematography that I absolutely dislike. It's very when action's going on in any scene, it turns to like super shaky, gritty, awkward camera angles where you can't really tell what's going on. But some angles and in some shots, it looks really good because it can show kind of like one of a director that I do enjoy, Neil Marsh, who did The Descent, he did Doomsday. It's kind of like that directing or cinematography where it's very fast paced cut and like very gritty, and it allows the director to show more practical stuff and not go digital with the effects. So it has its pros and cons. I'm against it. I'm not really a fan of it, but it does definitely have its place in the world. This movie, not that bad. Not that bad. I like how we have like this is why we have three people on. You know, someone who hates it, someone who's like in the middle, someone who is like Kyle. And you know what? There's a lot that I don't like to this movie. There's a lot that I can appreciate, and I can say that it's not entirely a shitter because of these reasons. And I don't think I would own this, but I'm not opposed to talking about it. Not opposed to having a conversation about it. Got some things to bring up, so yeah, we'll go on from there. Kyle?
I kind of mirror you almost 100%. Aside from the fact that I do like the cinematography and the quote-unquote British-style filmmaking, even though I think the guy's Canadian, or this Canadian-made film, or is it just made in Canada, or is the guy...
While Ian was saying that, I was looking up the cinematographer.
Oh, yeah.
There's no information on the cinematographer. His last name is Liston, which I feel like... James Liston?
Yeah, that, like, sounds... That sounds European in some way, right?
So this cinematographer actually worked with a Saw alumni director. Mm-hmm. He worked with somebody we just covered, David Hackle, in the movie Into the Grizzly Maze, with a stacked cast with Thomas Jane, James Marsden. Looked pretty good, but that's what the cinematography.
Yeah, I mean, this is probably the biggest selling point for me, is the cinematography of the movie. It's a huge draw to me. I love the way the film looks. I love the way it's filmed. And I like the chaotic action that ensues and how they filmed it. I was really on board in this movie for like the first half, and then it started to lose me. I feel like they get very... Which is to be expected, right? A lot of films during the aughts, people were pumping out zombie films, and each one was trying to do their little classic spin on why this one's more unique than another, right? Because there were so many, so they had to stand out in some form of way. Usually, it was the way the zombie virus was either spread or depicted or that kind of stuff, which in this case, it's no different. So I'll start there. Let's go back. I think it got a little too tropey, especially with to Brennan's point, running into the gang that kind of went full anarchy on it like 2 days into the virus happening. I thought that was absolutely ridiculous. And then the moment it got to that part, it completely took me out of the experience. That's when the movie really fell apart for me and I lost interest. Brennan, question.
The scene where they get kidnapped, mm-hmm. the helicopters that are shooting down at them are still there and just them get kidnapped instead of continuing to shoot the more people that have shown up.
Okay, we're just going to get into it. Yes, I would add this to my collection. I already bought it. It's on its way. And I watched it on Tubi. So yes, to that point, Brennan, it got to a... They tried, so we're like 2 days in, but then they established this like overworld arching scenario where like the fight's been going on for years or months, yeah. When in reality, like they've had 48 hours to experience all these traumatizing events that supposedly ensued. I don't get the whole situation with the shooters.
Also, they switch who the shooters are like halfway. Because at first, the people coming in, the main characters coming in, they're like, "Who are they?" And the guys are like, "Who do you think they are? Your daddy's not that loving it to you, is he?" And then so you assume that it's the company that's doing it, but then they change it to be some thugs.
No, I think they were just calling them thugs because they were almost like maybe PMC groups, like a private military corporation that was hired by the company to kind of keep control of the situation. But they don't really go too much into it. And then they also kind of
never show up again.
They never show up again. And then also they kind of hint at, sorry, this is going to be, we're going to be jumping everywhere. So let's not talk about one particular part of the movie or another. They kind of explain it in a way of like the father was like oblivious or ignorant to the whole experiments, and also the hiring of the shooters, and like everything was like being done under his nose, but they didn't outright say it. Did you guys get that impression?
No, I think the dad is in the boardroom when they talk about GX1134.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because assistant goes over it and he's like, "Oh, maybe we shouldn't talk about this in front of your son."
That's right. But that was where I think the story kind of gets very like confusing and like cut up, because they kind of give the sense of two different things. Like he's there during that scene, but then he's also oblivious to the entire outbreak and what's happening. It doesn't align with me with that arc.
And also,
like, the father arc was very weird to me. Yeah.
Because the movie ends on the father, correct?
In such a dumb way. He just walks into the hallway, and like, it's supposed to be some very somber, sad finale, and it just didn't hit for me. Maybe you guys feel different.
He literally, in the beginning, it showed that he literally had everything riding on his son taking up the company. And then he's just, oh, well. At the end, like, he doesn't even like go to try to help him. Like, he literally, he had everything riding on his son.
He also is heavily invested in his son taking over the company, but is unwilling to fill him in on any of the details and information. The son is completely oblivious when he gets there to everything that's happening, including the compound name of the thing that they're making. He literally thinks they're just lumberjacks, but he wants to. But the father is so hell bent on the kid taking over to just completely not go over any of that stuff. I don't know.
And there's this whole weird thing with the father when they're playing pool together. It's this like weird pseudo emotional moment, but he's also trying to teach him. He's like,
you got to stay one step ahead, plan ahead kind of thing.
Don't miss your shot. You need to know where you're going to end up when you go to shoot your shot. And it's all this stuff. And it's like, Kyle, you kind of said it perfectly. You're very much not preaching. You're very much not practicing what you're preaching to your son. And because of you not following through with your actions, your son will not be able to be the best that he can at this job that you want him to take.
So there's a pretty notable scene or a little notable line in that exchange where the son is like, "Oh, I landed my first plane today." Did anyone else think that was going to be like a foreshadowing to the end of the movie?
Him trying to escape? Yeah.
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 And then 100%. Just never happens.
It had zero connection with the rest of the movie. I probably rolled my eyes. I can't tell you if I did or not, but I probably rolled my eyes because when he said that, I was like, "Oh, well, that's going to be the escape scene at the end."
Exactly. Like the movie starts with him landing a plane.
Yeah.
And then nothing after that.
So to switch gears, this movie does try to establish a different method of the virus spreading and being created and whatnot. It goes for an approach of this is a genetically altered serum to increase the life speed of tree growth, and so they can harvest trees at a faster rate and manufacture and make more money, yada, yada, yada. Somehow this infects humans in such a way that turns them into zombies. They don't elaborate on it at all, on how it genetically changes the human DNA to become zombies. Your thoughts on it? I thought it was a cool idea, which didn't get executed properly. Do you guys have any thoughts on it?
Definitely. They kept going back and forth between a lab, and I don't know where this lab was, if it was on the island or if it was...
Are you talking about the lab that was run by Agent Smith?
Yes. Yeah, and he cuts himself at the end, and then...
Yeah, that was in the logging camp.
Okay. Where
do I think you're referring to the one with the like the African American guy and the white guy who gets turned into a zombie and takes him.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that one. Oh, sorry. Okay.
Where did that take place, and why did they never just go over it at all?
The only reason I can muster to give any kind of context on why that scene exists is that they're transporting. Like the virus is created in the lab, transported to the scientists on the field to then implement what they've created. But there really was no reason, in my opinion, to even have that included in the film, because it showed that there was like a point of origin for the outbreak. But then they don't really like they just walk into the crime scene, which I thought was hilarious. By the way, they're just walking through the crime scene through all the stuff, and everybody's like taking pictures. Everybody's in hazmat suits, but they're just in like normal attire. And there's like, I'm pretty sure they don't say anything either. They just like shake their heads and look around, and then they walk out of the door. And I was like, okay,
yeah, this movie doesn't really elaborate on anything. And to Brendan's point, it does just throw ideas and just never really stuck with any of them. Like the foreshadowing, like the scientist stuff, like the virus. It just throws ideas out there. And then just to like carry on the story and make you kind of like a little bit invested, but with no payoff.
See, that's the thing though, is I think that it did keep me invested.
Yeah.
And that's maybe just because that I'm a zombie fan. So I'm like already kind of like structured to like the film just based on what it's about. But like, I've seen a lot of bad zombie films where like I was out in the first 10 minutes. So yeah. This movie kept me invested enough to be interested to keep going. I would have kept going either way, but like if I wasn't watching it for the cast, I would have finished it upon starting it. Because I think the first half of the movie is actually very interesting and the setup is cool. And just to name off a few positives, I do think that the acting for the most part is pretty well done. But yeah, it's just the little things that don't connect together that kind of make it fall apart. Before we get too far ahead and transition, Brennan, do you have any thoughts on the virus?
You know what would have made this movie a lot more interesting?
Here we go.
What time is it? What time is it?
If they would have just...
would have made this movie better.
If they would have just foregone any of the zombie stuff and made it like eco-terrorists versus lumberjacks. And it was this like almost home invasion film in this logging camp from the perspective of these loggers. In these eco-activists like picking them off one by one.
I disagree. I actually think that throwing in
I do like the zombie
a
aspect.
Third mix though, like because it is already the like the eco-terrorists versus the lumberjacks, but then they throw in that third element to kind of like, I think they should have played more heavily into the two sides, like playing up having to work together and come to terms with like how they can agree on things and play up that part of it rather than just it being, they're all kind of one note characters that are just trying to survive against the zombies and they don't actually include their backgrounds into the story threads of surviving. They had a lot going here that I think could have been really cool.
Yeah.
I think it's the lack of destination that really like, made this movie kind of fumble story-wise. Because they do go to these points, but it's more of like, we just go to these points and see what happens. It's not like, oh, we're going to go here, connect to the other side of the world, blah, blah, blah. They're just like, oh, we're going to go to the police. And someone even says like, oh, what's the point of going to the police? He's like, I don't know, we can at least try. That's it. There's no like explanation on why they're doing these things.
So to get into that, it's, the movie to me felt very tropey and formulaic to where the outbreak happens, which it makes it seem like there's like 100 of these things when in reality, the lumberjack camp probably had like 20, 30, 40, maybe. Okay, yeah. I mean, 20 to 50, we'll just say 50 will be generous.
50 seems like a lot of lumberjacks.
Yeah. Well, because, okay. So this game that they've created that the kidnappers have created where they seemingly already have rules for this game built out on the second day of it's this so zombie.
Yeah, okay, no, hold on. Don't get too much into them because I do want to cover them. That whole section of the movie is a conversation of its own. So
okay.
Don't get too much into it, but go ahead and finish your thought.
He said three!
I just...
You got the fucking... Never mind, go ahead.
Jesus.
I just want to say, if I'm remembering correctly, the only reason that these people are out in this little shanty town with all of these provisions is because they were on strike, but they refused to leave the land until the strike was over. Did you guys
catch that? I didn't catch it. I mean, that sounds legitimate, but I didn't catch it.
Gotcha. So I think that's some interesting commentary on striking workers within a union.
A scene relating to that would be when they were chained to the trees. I thought that was really cool because they just come up on them and they're just, what do you do?
The scenario is cool.
Yeah, the scenario was really cool. Even though that dude just died. I don't even think he made it to the camp. they just freed him from the tree and then he died before he went.
And you brought up like the cops and all that kind of stuff. So it gets very tropey. They start out by hiding in a house cabin, which is the first part of a zombie movie where you see where like ideologies crash together and see who, you know, the human on human nature. That's in every zombie film, which is cool. I just don't think they did it very well. It was one of those things where the girl's like, we got to get out of here. And then the next, no, we got to hug her down and stay in here. And then like one person says one thing and she's like, all right, I'm out. Let's bounce. It's very like all over the place. They get in the car, they try to escape, blocked off, hide into another thing. And then we get to the compound. But the journey wasn't that great. So the destination, to your point, Ian, there wasn't a lot of like direction.
Yeah.
Anything to say?
I do like the I don't know if it was like the character writing or maybe the like demographic or what it was, maybe the acting, but I did like the group. Pretty fond of the group. There was obviously there had to be like one annoying person in every apocalypse. There always has to be that one person. Even if he had like better lines. Maybe if he was more aware of what was actually happening, I feel like I could sympathize with his character. But other than that, I do really like the cast. I feel like they were pretty well rounded, and you really hit like every single like point of view from this scenario.
Yeah, I was a really big fan of is Mac his name?
Yeah, the boss.
Yeah, right, really big fan of Mac, and
really,
I like
because he pissed me the fuck off when. The four of them finally get in the truck and they're driving away. And the one zombie like reaches his hand in while they're driving and they get the zombie off and they realize there's one more zombie. It's very obvious that zombie's going to be Luke because that's the only person Mac has talked about this entire fucking movie.
Yeah.
And instead of just letting the zombie hang onto the back of your car and it will eventually fall off, Mac makes this very big point. He's like, no, I'm gonna kill this zombie. It's like, of course it's gonna be Luke. And then Mac almost, I kind of wanted Mac to die at that point because he's such a dumbass for even doing that.
I mean, I would have stopped.
I actually didn't mind the scene.
I would have stopped. And I actually liked when she was hacking at him. I thought it was really cool with her in the background hacking at him. Well,
And Mac's just like, no, look, I love Luke. And she's like, fuck you.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's like, I like that motherfucker.
I thought that was cool. And I think that Mac is, it's not a super interesting, compelling backstory, but it did give it some heart that he lost his kid. Is that what it is? Or he couldn't have kids? Something like that?
No, he always wanted a boy.
He always wanted a boy, and he never had one. So these were his boys. He took care of them. You know, they were like his sons.
He might just be gay.
You know, maybe he is. Don't sound too judgy.
No.
But maybe he was gay. All right, relax. But. I think that was just something that was kind of needed to get invested in at least one of the characters. Because to Ian's previous point with the main character, I think it would have been cool to actually have him kind of go push even further against his dad and go against the company and that kind of stuff. I think that would have, like his revelatory moment where he finds out that the company his dad's trying to push on him so much is evil and like he has to kind of go against that. I think that would have been cool. And it would have been like, a good motive
would have been that would have made the movie better, but instead he's just very clueless to everything that's going on. He really just doesn't care.
Enjoying this conversation.
You know what else would have made the movie better? There was one thing, and I'm curious as to your guys' thoughts on this. This movie was so afraid to take any fucking chances. It is so safe for a 2005 zombie movie with a fairly decent cast, and I would assume an okay budget. They take no fucking chances. Everything is so cookie cutter to every other zombie movie. And there's one moment where we get a night vision view, a POV view from one of the zombies. We get it once. That would have been so cool if we got that view as a zombie runs up and tackles someone and starts hacking away at their insides. You know, like take some chances, do something different. You had an opportunity to make a really interesting Earth climate activist zombie movie.
Yeah, totally.
In everything you do is just so milquetoast, I guess is the only word I can think of. I don't know.
This is why the aughts are so important for zombie films, because it's a huge resurgence. Everybody was doing them. And so you have so many films that are either going to hit or not. I think this movie's actually not that bad. I just think that it doesn't stand out enough to make it great. And it is very formulaic. It's very basic. And it was on the cusp of being something better. And it didn't take chances, to your point, Brendan. It didn't get weird enough, which is why I'm also very interested in covering Undead from the aughts, which is an Australian zombie film, which I personally like. And also why I think Rambok is so special. Take it or leave it. I understand why you may not like it or may think it's boring or filmed a certain way, but it has its unique factor to it. It has its own personality to it, which I think that a lot of zombie films either hit or miss in the aughts. Ian, question.
This film didn't take any risks, very cookie cutter. What do you guys like this movie more or over House of the Dead?
I thought you were going to say Shaun of the Dead.
No, Shaun of the Dead. House of the Dead, because that took all the risks. It was House of the Dead
is very different, though. It's very different. Like, House of the Dead is trying to be fun, and this movie isn't trying to be fun. So it's already got that advantage just off of, like, appealing to more people. Yeah. So, like, I don't know. Looking back, I would say that I think that this film is better than House of the Dead, but I would rather watch House of the Dead with, like, a group of friends.
Mm-hmm. If it was like a desert island thing where you said to me, I'm putting you on this island, you can only watch one zombie movie, House of the Dead, or this, I'm picking House of the Dead.
I think so too. Yeah, I don't think this movie is a group film. I think
it's a solo film.
Yeah, you just watch it on your own because it's not bad enough to where it's enjoyable to watch with other people. It's very neutral.
Before we get into final thoughts and ratings, do you guys want to touch on The Compound? Do you guys just want to rant about how ridiculous it is
with the Texas Chainsaw 2 style dinner scene?
With the guy who's experienced so much shit now that he's like some religious nut, and he's like, "The devil is about us. The world is ending."
I mean, I could see that too.
Yeah.
The other guy on the other hand, the dude who like smashes in the dude's hand with the spoon, and then he's like,
"Bro,
no, give me."
I was like, "Dude, it's been 24 hours." calm down. You guys are still eating like cooked meals. Yeah. Can you relax for a second? You're not eating out of cans. You're not resorting to cannibalism. Just like calm down.
There is literally a cupboard behind them with hundreds of cans of Campbell's soup.
Yeah, they're chilling, dude. They have electricity. They have electricity. They have beds. They have hot meals. Like,
okay, can I just say something that would have been absolutely hysterical when the first time they play the game, when they put the religious zealot out there, that's right after the scene where there's like, well, we only have three beds, so one of y'all is gonna have to share. And then they send the zealot guy out there, and I thought it would have been really funny if he died, and then they would have been like, I guess you guys have four beds now.
No more fucking for you two. The Mad Max dude, the Mad Max gimp guy, he was hilarious. And I think that, I think I said in my Lars and the Real Girl review, that I was like one minor inconvenience from this happening to me, from me becoming Lars. This dude was literally looking for the most minuscule excuse to go full crazy.
To be himself.
Exactly. To be himself in front of other people.
Crazy how they're like 2 days into it and they already have this like gladiator style fucking full anarchy entertainment thing. I don't
like, they watched The Walking Dead, they were ready for it.
Yeah.
I will 100%. Say though, I think the most effective scene is the one where Agent Smith is forced to play the game and the gun jams and he just completely melts down. I think he's screaming like, I don't want to play. And then he just falls down and starts crying.
You're talking about the scientist, right?
Yeah.
he was such a bitch and I hated him at first. And then I don't know why, but like he became less and less irritating the more I was watching it. I think now that I'm thinking about it, I think it's just because they introduced so many more characters that were more irritating than him that he became less irritating towards the end. But
I do find it interesting that he's a character that we don't really see. We see scientists in horror movies often, but we don't really see corporate scientists, and that's what he feels like. He feels like he's just one of the guys that, you know, works at like Glad Plastic Wrap, and
he's just coming
designs
in for his paycheck as well.
Exactly. You know,
he got his degree. This is the job that he landed at when he graduated, and he's just like trying to make some money.
Yeah. That's what his character seems like, and I can understand how he feels very annoying, and then he kind of has this comeuppance once more annoying people are introduced.
Yeah. All right, let's get into our final thoughts and rating. Brennan, we're going to throw it to you first. What was your rating for what is your rating for 2005's zombie film, Severed?
There have obviously been worse zombie movies, and there have obviously been better. I'm going to add a 0.5 extra to my review for introducing me to tree spiking. Nice. And if a rash of tree spiking starts to happen in my area, you guys know who to look at. I'm going to give it a 2.5 with no heart.
Nice.
Ian? I'm joking about the tree spiking thing, by the way.
No, he's not. Right. Ian, let's go ahead and throw it over to you next. What is your final thoughts and rating for Severed 2005?
This movie, it's not terrible. It's got something. Mm-hmm. It's got something there. But I just don't. I feel like with all the flaws, with all the things that they could have done, with the foreshadowing, with all the ideas, with the misdirection. Everything just could have gone a little smoother if they stuck with just one of those things. Brendan's review or his score is perfect. 2.5. 2.5.
Okay. This movie is one that I watched a lot of these zombie films. Like I tried to actively go out and just rent anything I could find that had a zombie on it at Blockbuster or Hollywood Video. This is one I didn't know about. And I appreciate AC Royals for introducing it to me. I think it does have a lot going for it. It's not executed well, and it's kind of a mess in a lot of ways. But there are things about it that I like. I like the characters. I like the way it's filmed. I like the idea of the zombie virus transmission, even though they don't go into it enough. And it's I'm glad that I'll own it because. The aughts zombie films, I'm a little bit of a collector in that sense. I like to own those if they're worthy of it, and I think this one is. I'm going to go ahead and give it a 3 stars with a heart. So that being said, I think it's 2.5, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's going to get a 2.5, no heart, for the 2005 film Severed. How do you guys feel about that?
I feel okay.
It's very fair.
Okay. All right. Before we get into not only America's favorite game, but the world's, please enjoy these messages from the Ruminations Radio Network. We'll be right back.
What's up, gang? This is Hoptimus. You've been listening to one of the great new podcasts from Ruminations Radio Network. If you want some more tasty sound vibes, come check out my new podcast, The Retro Futurist Culture, where we talk about alternate timelines, cyberpunk, anime, and other crazy worlds. If that does not strike your fancy, we have plenty of other great shows at ruminationsradionetwork.com.
Welcome back to Ruminations of Red Rum, the horror podcast of the Ruminations Radio Network. It's time to get into the game that everybody listens to the entire episode and definitely doesn't stop the episode before it gets to it. What's in the box? The game where I read a movie summary from Letterboxd. My co-hosts then have to guess the average rating within 0.3 of what the Letterboxd score is. If they get that correct, they then guess the decade the film was made. If they get that correct, they can guess the year for a third point. Gentlemen, are you ready?
trying to do this in a Canadian accent. Maybe I'll just do a James Bond accent. She whatever.
Bernie.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. First, a masterpiece of erotic horror. Horror novelist John and his girlfriend Shirley are taking a night drive in search of an eerie graveyard that will hopefully inspire John to come up with his next story, but instead stumble onto the wild rituals conducted by the Dark Master and his faithful servants.
This is the one that sounds sick.
2.4.
Dark Master and Unfaithful Servants. I'm going to go with... Brennan, you said 2.4?
Yeah.
I'm going to go 2.8.
Brendan with the points. First one on the board. Guess the decade.
Give me 70s.
It's sitting at a 2.2, by the way.
Okay.
Oh. 80s.
Ian with 80s.
That's what I was going to say.
Just say it.
No, I'll say 2000s.
You are both incorrect. It is the 1965 film directed by Stephen Apostoloff, Orgy of the Dead.
Adding it.
Brennan 1, Ian 0. Number 2. Makes Night of the Living Dead look like a kid's pajama party.
Is it actually in quotes?
It is in quotes. In 13th century Berzano, a legion of knights known as the Templar were executed for conducting black magic rituals and committing human sacrifices in a quest for eternal life. 700 years later, they rise from the dead and attack a group of vacationing college students who visit the remains of their abandoned monastery.
2.6.
Give me... 2.7.
You both are incorrect. It is at a 3.2. Guess the decade.
2000s.
Give me 80s.
You both are incorrect. It is the 1972 film directed by Armando de Osorio, Tombs of the Blind Dead.
Oh. Did I watch that one? I think I've seen that one.
I think you did, actually, if I remember correctly.
Hate to see it.
All right, strap in.
No, this is the long one.
Yeah, it is a long one. Number 3, Adventure Beyond the Edge of Time. A team of scientists working to raise a sunken Russian nuclear submarine on an ocean platform off the coast of Miami, Florida, unearth an ancient Atlantean relic from the seafloor and bring in an expert to make sense of it. But while attempting to raise the sub, radioactive leakage from its missiles trigger the reemergence of Atlantis, and the resulting tidal wave destroys the platform and leaves only a small group of survivors. Rescued by two Vietnam-turned heavies who are out relaxing after their latest job, their boat eventually runs aground on a Caribbean island nearby, where upon going ashore, it is discovered that everything has been destroyed and everybody killed. The culprits, a vicious group of well-armed raiders, and their leader, Crystal Skull, are descendants of Atlantis, original race who set about reclaiming the world and adding the survivors to the list of victims as they struggle to stay alive and defeat the raiders and send Atlantis back to the ocean floor.
This has some of my favorite conspiracies in it, and I need to watch whatever this is.
This is the one where I said it looks awesome, like the cover and everything.
3.1. I'll probably give it a 5, but
2.4.
Brendan with his second point on the board. It is sitting at a 3.0. Guess the decade.
You know, I was thinking 60s or 2000s. Now I'm thinking 90s.
Come on, Ian. Get on the board, man.
Now I'm thinking 90s. Should I go with 90s?
I don't know. Should you?
Should I go with 80s?
I'm going to say 80s.
You're going to say 80s. I feel like this is can be an older one, or it can be like a really bad newer one.
It could be both of those.
I feel like anything, it's really. Like the movie Atlantis Rim. I'm going to go 2000s.
So we have 2000s and Brennan?
80s.
Brennan with another point on the board. It is, in fact, in the 80s. Guess the year.
Can I do a clean sweep? 1985.
Can you do a clean sweep?
1985.
There's your clean sweep.
1985. That is incorrect. It is the 1983 film directed by Ruggero Deodato. It is Raiders of Atlantis.
That sounds so good.
I'm going to be watching this film at some point. And it's got a 3.0? Yeah, I'm going to be watching.
What did you
Are you guys ready
again?
For number
Raiders
4?
Raiders of Atlantis. Looks good. On Tubi. Oh,
number 4.
Cannibal Holocaust.
You can still tie it, Ian.
Oh, we're doing another one?
One more. Yep.
I didn't lose yet.
It'll blow you away. The strange and brutal deaths of Corey's grandparents has haunted him for years. Determined to discover the truth, he is returned to the desolate region where they lived, along with a group of friends, to try and uncover the mystery. Ignoring warnings from the locals that the area is cursed, Corey and his friends soon realize that the legend is true, as the demon wind possesses and destroys them one by one, turning them into monsters from hell.
If this isn't an 80s movie, I don't know what is. I'm going to go 3.2.
2.7.
Brendan with another point. It is sitting at 2.6. Guess the decade.
1983.
1974. 1974.
You both are incorrect. It is the 1990 film directed by Charles Philip Moore, Demon Wind.
Damn, I knew what the title was. I just didn't know. I just didn't know anything else.
This has been another episode of Ruminations of Red Rum, the tree spike of the Ruminations Radio Network. If you like what we're doing here, please follow us on Twitter at Of Red Rum. That's OF Red Rum. While you're at Twitter or X, whatever, go ahead and visit our profile. Click on that link. Join our Discord. Come hang out with us. Come recommend some horror movies for us to watch. Get your episode on the air. I've been your host, Kevin, with a K. Also joining me, we have the Spooky Boy, the Ghost of Mars, the Ghost of Tsushima, the paranormal one that haunts your living space. He's Ian with two E's. Ian.
I'd love to hear Brennan's impression of Lou Ferrigno as a zombie.
And that ghastly voice you heard is the stretchy boy, the hero of San Fran, Cisco, Brendan, Jesus, Ortega,
Madison. Democracy never dies. Helldivers all the way.
Stay spooky, folks.